Today on the Nerd Outcast podcast, we talk about Assassin's Creed. To talk about the entire Assassin's Creed series. As is typical for this podcast, I've brought on a group of experts who feel they can speak with some authority on this given topic. My first expert has been on before, and his name is...
DJ Fink.
Welcome back, DJ.
Well, thank you, Chris.
So, just so the audience is prepared, you were one of the big voters for this topic.
I probably was the one who introduced it and wouldn't stop talking to you until you put it on the schedule.
Right, right. So it got on the schedule, and here we are tonight.
Woohoo!
So, DJ, real quick, in case someone's listening to you for the first time, what type of nerd are you? Specifically, maybe within the realms of video games?
Kind of specific. I like story-driven games. I like the Batman Arkham series. Assassin's Creed's one of my favorite. I kind of like the, you know, third-person, over-the-shoulder, doesn't have to do a whole lot of multiplayer, story-driven anthologies that just keep you coming back for more.
What is, this is my unfair question to you, your favorite game of all time?
Favorite game of all time would probably be Batman Arkham Asylum.
Oh, you like it better than Knight.
Yes, I mean, Knight is amazing, but Arkham Asylum was the one that hooked me. It was the one that brought a decent Batman video game to modern times.
Okay, very nice. Well, hold on to your thoughts and feelings. We will jump into this discussion very shortly. My other expert is new to the show, and go and introduce yourself, sir. Who are you?
I am Derek Kolb.
Welcome to the show, Derek.
Thank you.
It's always nice to have a new person, new blood.
Yeah,
We won't kill you, but new blood.
Yeah.
So, Derek, unless they're listening to a future episode and then listening to this one. But let's say they're listening to you for the first time. What type of nerd are you? All genres, in all things.
All genres. Kind of like DJ, I'm also very story-driven, which applies to video games, music, which is my biggest passion, TV shows, books. Just, something that can draw you in, good characters. Doesn't even have to be a great story and well-executed, but just something that, connections, lost...
I feel like that's a spoiler for later.
Perhaps, yes.
Thank you, Rob.
You mentioned music. Yeah. Who's your favorite musician? Or band?
Right now, it's Tame Impala, I would say. I mean, I like to keep listening to new things as new music comes out, and even going back into older music and finding new things through that. But right now, I'm really impressed with what Tame Impala is doing.
Who do you think is the greatest band of all time, even if you're not a fan of them?
Greatest band of all time? This is the unfair question, I'm assuming.
Oh, yeah, this is the unfair
fair
question.
Fair enough. On the spot, I would say that brief time that Jimi Hendrix was in Band of Gypsies, even though I don't like a lot of the other jam band music, just there is a lot of very spontaneous performances, and it was not very polished. But it really kind of expressed a lot of emotion through a lot of mistakes and just well-crafted songs.
Okay. Since we're talking about video games tonight,
yes.
What are some of your favorite games?
A lot of role-playing games. The Final Fantasy series is huge. Yes.
Which one's your favorite?
Final Fantasy VI.
Oh, we did a topic on that one.
I know. I listened to that one. Probably that, like, 10 is right behind it.
Yes.
Great games. Right now I'm playing Destiny a bit, loving that game.
Are you excited for the Final Fantasy VII remake?
I am. Just to see what else they do with the story with it.
Okay.
And to kind of tie a few more things in, because I like what the movie did, Advent Children, even though it wasn't like a true connection. It kind of felt a little disjointed, but I'm excited to see if they can tie all this in. All those extra games they did, like Dirge of Cerberus.
Yeah.
See if they can kind of make some sense of all the... And like Crisis Core was a great PSP game.
Okay.
they can tie all that stuff in, I think it'd be awesome.
Cool. Well, welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We will jump into this very shortly.
Awesome.
As is typical for this podcast, I have brought on not one, but two outcasts. My first outcast has been on the show before, and his name is...
Rob Shoemaker.
Welcome back, Rob.
Hey, man. Thanks.
First off, I want to point to out to the audience that you were wearing a Death Star shirt.
I am.
Which makes me very happy.
Okay.
I like that it shows me where I can fly in to destroy the...
This is the Rebel schematics that they got from the band.
It's much better than a New Hope schematics. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Rob, in case someone's listening to you for the first time, what type of nerd are you?
I'm a little bit all over, really. Comic books, sci-fi. I like my movies, dark and sci-fi. I like my video games.
Okay.
I like them all.
All right. Since you brought up video games, what are some of your favorite video games?
Well, like I've said before, and I was on the podcast for this one, the Mass Effect. Probably one of my all-time favorite trilogies. Still go back and play it. I actually still have a slight chubby from them announcing the new Mass Effect 4.
Aren't they doing a remake of the trilogy also?
Well, there's been rumors that they were going to put them on.
Remastering, I think.
For the new consoles. But with them going doing the backward compatibility for the Xbox One, sorry, PlayStation 4 peeps, they don't really need it for the Xbox One.
But they can make it prettier.
They can make it prettier, for sure. They can clean up a lot of the issues that One had.
They did it to Final Fantasy X, and it looked really good.
So. Okay.
Now, Rob, you're one of my outcasts. Mm-hmm. Have you played Assassin's Creed?
I have, yeah. I played the first one.
You didn't play the second
one? A little bit of... Is it the second one with Leonardo da Vinci?
For some reason, I thought you were about to say Leonardo DiCaprio.
Yeah.
Fassbender.
Michael Fassbender's in that one. So, why are you my outcast? Why did you not like the game?
I was really bored by the game. I tried so hard to like it. It was such a cool concept. I was so wowed when it starts out in the future and you've got all this intrigue with like this guy being captured and being tested and they're going back into his past, into his ancestry to figure out something. You don't know what. I was very intrigued. Boy, that gameplay sucks so hard. I could not get past it.
So we're talking about a couple different things. We're talking about story and gameplay. Yeah. I'm the other outcast for tonight. I want to say I'm kind of actually in the opposite boat of you. I didn't like the futuristic setting. And
it's the
I
only
think,
reason I kept playing the game.
I think that was a big... I didn't really follow the game heavily, so I was actually surprised that there was even a futuristic setting.
Yeah.
Or a modern-day setting, sorry. I thought it was all historical settings. That actually surprised me. I did not like the animus or whatever weird thing that they were doing.
Yeah.
And I remember... Mm-hmm. I don't remember the gameplay being frustrating. I just remember it being unintuitive. Like, it was a
not a big fan of stealth games, and so this is not really in my wheelhouse.
Did you beat the game?
I did not. I stopped. Like, I got frustrated with it.
Did you get maybe like two-thirds?
Yeah,
three-thirds.
I got about two-thirds. Cool.
Have you played Metal Gear Solid?
I have, and didn't like it as much either. Like I got frustrated with that game too for the same reason. Not a big stealth fan. Actually, I got more frustrated with that game because of the half-hour cutscenes.
Did you play Mirror's Edge?
I did play Mirror's Edge. Mirror's Edge I liked, though.
Okay.
But that's different. That was...
It's more parkour. It's not super stealthy. Yeah. It's just direct, like, maybe not shooting and, like, action, but, like, running through things and still, like, going headfirst into it.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Rob, as one of my outcasts... you have the Conk About cast, so as we talk about things, you're welcome to challenge or bring up anything that you want or question.
I will say, when I was playing a multiplayer, I don't remember which one introduced the multiplayer, but I remember watching a friend play the multiplayer, and a lot of the parkour stuff that was going on in that looked a lot faster paced, looked a lot smoother, looked a lot more polished. Maybe if I had started a little bit later on in the series, I might have stuck with it, but that first game soured me so much.
All right, well, let's talk about the series proper. There it is, my experts. Two outcasts, two experts. Only one will leave here alive. We're talking about Assassin's Creed, a series of 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 games, if I'm correct in saying that. Assassin's Creed in 2007, Assassin's Creed 2 in 2009. Brotherhood in 2010. Is that a game or is that an expansion?
Assassin's Creed 2 is like a trilogy.
Because then you also have Revelations.
Yeah, okay. It was Assassin's Creed 2, Brotherhood, and Revelations were all part of Assassin's Creed 2. Yeah.
Okay, and then we have Assassin's Creed 3, and then 4, Black Flag. Is that it? Am I correct in all of that?
No, and then you've got the two latest games, Assassin's Creed Rogue and then Unity, which is the game that came out for the modern consoles only. Mm-hmm. So PS4 and the Xbox 360.
Or Xbox One.
I'm a PS guy, so I
gotcha.
You people on your white consoles, whatever.
Black.
Well, that came out for the
Hey, don't be racist.
And then Rogue came out at the same time, just for last gen, for PS3. And
there have been some portable games.
Yeah.
Yes.
As well.
China Chronicles or something?
Like Liberty.
Oh, Liberation.
Liberation. Yes. I haven't played those. But and then there have been like Facebook games. I mean, so it's expanded into quite the empire of things related to Assassin's Creed.
All mm-hmm. right, so since we kind of already brought up the first game, let's start with the first game. Mm-hmm. My two experts. Did you play this back in 2007?
I played it probably 2008, right after my brother bought the game. He was always kind of ahead of me on the games. He was a great brother to have. Love this guy. Kind of like your guys' relationship. Very awesome. But maybe. He introduced me to Fallout 3, for example, and then like, he loved that game. Let me borrow that. Loved that game. He's like, here's this Assassin's Creed. He's like, bear with it. It's a little rough, but it gets great. And so I played that. Yeah, right around 2008, I would say, probably right after it came out.
Was this assessment right? Did you feel it was rough, but you
kind of
stuck with it?
Yeah, and it was the same kind of thing you said earlier where I didn't know there were the modern-day settings, and that's what drew me in. The actual gameplay of the stealth and the following conversations I thought was very clumsy and a little unrefined.
Something I want to say about that.
Yeah.
The first time I booted the game up, I was super excited about it. Because it had gotten so much buzz. It was one of the first, like, for the next-gen console, it was, like, one of the first titles that came out, actually, like, a year later.
Mm-hmm.
They had announced it before the consoles came out. And we were afraid it was only going to be a PlayStation game, and then finally it was announced that it was going to be on both.
Yeah.
So I got it, playing it. One of the first things is where you're in the Animus, I believe, and they're teaching you how to play the game. And you're going through a crowd, and you've got to not bump somebody or something.
Oh, yeah.
It took me like 45 fucking minutes. And I was so frustrated, I shut it down and turned it back on for like 3 months. I was like, okay, I'm going to try again.
Yeah.
Got it first try, the second time.
DJ, what do you think?
I was hooked from the time I saw the first trailer. Because it was this great cutscene of the Middle Ages, Crusades time, and you've got this guy in a white robe kind of flowing in and out of the crowd. Walks up, takes a guy out, and then disappears into this like group of monks that are walking away. And again, when I first saw it, no idea in the modern setting. The whole modern setting aspect of, you know, you start out in the beginning of the game, you're following along and you're in the Middle Ages, and all of a sudden you kind of wake up in this tube. And so what it turns out is the premise of the game is you're a modern day character. In the chronology of the game, it starts as like 2012, even though it was 2007. Mm-hmm. And you're reliving, you can access the memories of your ancient ancestors through your DNA, but in order to remember them, you have to live them chronologically through their steps.
Who is the character that is doing this?
So the character that you play initially is a guy named Desmond Miles.
Okay.
And he comes from a line of ancestors that included Altair, who's the protagonist of really the main story of the game, who was this master assassin during the Crusades. And so you take on his memories, Desmond's reliving his memories forcibly, it turns out. He's being forced to do this. He was kidnapped and has to relive his ancestors' memories. For what purpose, he doesn't know. But so you're kind of playing two stories simultaneously. Mm-hmm. And the modern day story comes in chunks as you complete certain segments of the your ancient ancestor. The gameplay was a little rough. I mean, it was 2007. It was trying to do open world stealth. And, you know, you'd be in a crowd. And for the time, the technology was pretty good. But again, you know, it probably could have been more refined.
In hindsight, I feel it was trying to do what Arkham Asylum did way better.
Yeah.
Minus the stealth. I mean, you can play Batman stealth-like if you want. You can also go to town. Yeah. But it's also easy to hide in those games should you get caught. Is it easy to hide in Assassin's Creed?
Relatively. There's kind of a point where you're forced to go and hide and kind of run away. But you're playing as an assassin. And an assassin in the truest sense. You're from the Muslim assassin group that kind of brought about the modern word. So you're in a setting where it's the assassins as a group against the Templars as a group during the course of the Crusades. So there's political intrigue. There's some religious intrigue, which is interesting given the time that it was released. It kind of takes history and turns it on its head a little bit, which is one of the things that I really liked. Mm-hmm. But yeah, there's some, even the gameplay being rough and having been improved progressively throughout each of the games, I was stuck with it enough that it became one of my favorite franchises based on the experiences of that first game.
Yeah, it's almost the way you brought up Mass Effect earlier, which I love that series too. And that first game is a little rough around the edges, yeah. You know. Mm-hmm. Still a great story that keeps you through it, and then the second game just completely improves all those fine details, but still holds the same like core gameplay.
Right.
And that's what like Assassin's Creed 2, when I played that, was like Mass Effect 2. It's like, I really liked what you're doing, you didn't nail it yet, but you've got my attention. And then Mass Effect 2, amazing game. Assassin's Creed 2, a much better version of that.
Before we jump to the second game, as far as like the controls go, is there like in Metal Gear Solid, like you know when someone has spotted you? Does Assassin's Creed do a similar thing? Like, is there an exclamation point that appears above
the
someone's
screen
head?
Flashes red and kind of almost changes the color, almost kind of grays a few things out and kind of makes it very aware that your whole screen changes tone. And there's a big red flashing thing, and you can see on your radar all the people that have seen you that are chasing you, which your radar also shows you, I think in the first game, I don't know all of them, but spots you can hide, like wells, windows you can jump in, groups you can sit on the bench with or blend into. So it gives you a bunch of options to do that.
But that's one of the things about the first game that was kind of, I thought was kind of unique, is instead of like sneak around and don't be seen, there was an aspect of this game that was very much be in plain sight, but blend in.
Yeah.
It wasn't sneak around the corner and if somebody sees you, run away and try it again in 5 minutes when things have reset.
Mm-hmm.
This was very much, if you time things properly, you can walk out into a middle of a group of people that are dressed similarly, or you could hire like, women to kind of distract guards. And it tried to put the stealth concept into a little bit different. So, you know, like you mentioned with Batman, you're not hiding up on a high pillar someplace or in the rafters.
I remember Altair, is that his name? Like, he's incredibly agile. Like, you can run up walls and stuff, right? Am I imagining that?
They've done a better job in the more present-day games of turning it into actual parkour-type moves. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of what the concept was. It was you're scampering up walls and you're hanging off of, you know, or ladders, and you're running on rooftops, and you're getting away from the crowd when you have to. If you're doing that in the middle of the day, it's obvious. But if you're doing it, you know, when you have to get away from everyone else, that's the difference between you and the people chasing you, is you've got that agility.
When they make it tense, they throw you in the moments too, because they put guards on the roofs and on all these places. So if you try to just climb up and jump down, you can't do it. They will find you and spot you. So it forces you into these really tense moments where you're in the middle of all these guards. There's 20 guards all around you, and you're just walking with these, you know, nuns or other things just passing by your target. And you see your target getting closer and closer as you get by, and this is really tense. Your heart is racing. And then you either get super frustrated when some dumb thing happens and you fail it, or you actually succeed. You know, pull off and just slash them real quick and they die. And then everyone else goes into chaos, but they still don't know it's you, and you're still in the middle of it.
When, I guess we should talk about that. When you assassinate someone, like, is it a quick time event? Is it like, how does he do it? Does he kill people? Is he poison them?
It's
like,
a moment.
How does this work?
It's like killing a normal guard or anything else. It's just a quick button press. Obviously, they're more heavily guarded, so you have to get through a little bit more security and defense to get to it. Once you actually kill them, it's kind of neat. It goes into this weird freeze time thing within the animus where it's just you and the person you assassinated.
Mm-hmm.
and you get to actually you talk to them, and they tell you what they were doing, or they're like, you know, damn you assassin, I was going to, you know, whatever, and reveals a little bit more of the story.
Yeah, so about that story, why is Desmond reliving these assassins?
You don't find out in the first game at all, do you?
You do, kind of at the very end.
At the very end. So, but what it turns out to be is that Desmond...
Spoiler alert.
Yeah, Desmond is actually from a group of assassins of modern day. So the assassins and the Templars from the Middle Ages during the Crusades... turns into he's Desmond, the modern day character, is actually an assassin, or at least was brought up amongst them. He never really decided to join their ranks. Part of the story is he actually ran away. He was like in the Black Hills, where his family had a camp and amongst other assassins, and he ran away when he was young. Abstergo Industries, which is the name of the corporation where you're trapped, is actually the modern day Templars. They've turned into this mega corporation. That's their front. And so they're using this genetic memory technology to use Desmond to find out what his ancestors, who defeated Templars back in the day, how they were defeated, where certain historical objects have been placed. Because then you get into the third aspect of the story, which really does a number on your head.
Did you learn this in the first game?
Aspects of it.
It's more the second game trilogy, which I just, because it's so convoluted, and I think even loving this game, I openly admit how convoluted and crazy it gets.
Oh, Metal Gear Solid has really.
Oh, that's even. And I love Metal Gear. And it's,
the way they touch on this aspect of the story in the first game is your character when you're reliving the memories, Altair, he has what they call Eagle Vision. Eagle Vision, if you want to compare it to the Arkham, it's like detective vision. Mm-hmm. You can see bad guys. You can kind of see certain things that stand out. The whole screen kind of gets as bluish, grayish, and then there are things that are highlighted that really jump at you. Like, that's the target. He's in gold. The bad guys are highlighted in red. And they don't explain a whole lot of where this ability comes from, other than it's something that's kind of passed down generation to generation. And Desmond, during the course of the game, like I said, he's very confused, doesn't really know what's going on, kind of comes to realize that he at least is the descendant of Altair. And at the very end of the game, there's a reveal that he gets Eagle Vision for the first time now as an adult. And he sees messages sprawled around the room where he's been trapped that tell him they've done this with other people, and it's kind of like a warning, Danger Will Robinson moment of, holy God, what have I gotten myself into?
Now, were they planning on making more, like, was this planned to be a longer story? I mean, like, the first Batman game, I feel, could be its own thing and be done. Mass Effect, they had planned to make that
a trilogy,
if possible, if the money had allowed it. Was Assassin's Creed always designed to be a larger?
I think it was planned to be a trilogy.
That's my understanding. Is they had written it to be at least a trilogy, but one of the things that they kind of discovered along the way is there's so much history that we can wrap into our little world of Assassins and Templars that really we can go anywhere we want to with this.
So Assassin's Creed 2, this is the one that everyone raves about and says is freaking phenomenal.
Because of Ezio Auditore di Firenze.
Yeah.
Fantastic lead character. Yeah.
Totally different assassin, I'm assuming. Is who this is. What's the setting for this one?
Well, so you have to go back to the end of the first game. Altair starts off as this master assassin, and he does something to betray his masters. He's cocky, he's self-assured, and he kind of goes against the wishes of his master. So he's demoted, and that's their kind of reasoning for you having to learn all of your skills all over again. That's your progression during the first game. And once you become a master again, at the end of the game, you realize that your masters actually betrayed you as Altair. So, of course, he kills the bad guys, and then he becomes the master and rethinks the thinking of the original Assassin Order and pushes the order out into the world much further in order to allow his order to grow, because he knows the Templars are growing as well.
Does Altair and Ezio ever meet?
No, because they actually live in different chronological time periods.
Oh, okay.
But so you meet them through Desmond, mm-hmm. who is the mutual ancestor of all these different bloodlines converging.
There's a cool moment, I think it's the end of Revelations, where Ezio, who's much older, it goes through from him being 20 to being 60 through that trilogy of games. He ends up finding an artifact in Altair's lap. You find the final setting is the tomb of Altair, and you go and you pick the key off of his corpse. So you get to see that, which is interesting if you've been playing the games, you know, enjoying the whole time. You get that connection again, which is pretty neat. But
the Renaissance, is that what the is that the setting for the second game?
You got Leonardo DiCaprio.
Leonardo DiCaprio.
His pizzas are really good. So what does Assassin's Creed 2 do that's so phenomenal? Why is it?
Well, Assassin's Creed 2 introduces what I thought you were going to get into earlier, the ultimate core of why there are Templars and Assassins, which it starts to reveal, and this is where it gets crazy, and I love this, but it's so weird, that this is where we have to buckle up, I think, and help me if I mess anything up.
Yeah,
there's actually this ancient civilization that is very advanced technologically and psychically and all these things, and they create the human race to be their slaves and to help build everything they want to create and all their technologies. And some humans break free and...
Actually, it turns out to be the story of Adam and Eve.
Yeah.
Adam and Eve weren't the creation of God, the singular being from, you know, Catholic thinking. Mm-hmm. They were actually created as two of the humans that started this kind of rebellion against this race of ancient people.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Wow, how did the Christian front not come across this game?
Well,
I think it did, actually. I think the first one did spark some weird religious...
Which, just as a side note, I mean, there's a lot of religion, there's a lot of history. Each game starts with the statement that this game was created by a multicultural group of people from different ethnicities and religions, and that in no way reflects, you know, any opinion about what history is or was. They're just using it as the canvas for their stories.
But so it's happened. So these people escape, Adam and Eve escape, and create, you know, human culture and society. But then some groups of humans decide they want to have more order in our lives. We can't just survive on free will and free thinking. We need some order and establishment, and that becomes the Templars. Then this other group says, well, no, that's exactly what that, which I don't remember what that civilization was called.
They were just like the first civilization.
They say, no, that's too much like the first civilization. We need free will and to think on our own and act on your own and be independent. And that becomes the Assassins.
Yeah. And their motto is nothing is true. Everything is permitted.
Everything. Yeah. So that's why neither one is good or evil. One just wants order. One wants more free will. And that's why they're battling. And as you realize that, it's not just good versus evil. There's also this third, you know, this ancient civilization, which is trying to prevent a solar flare from destroying the Earth again, which is something that it's like...
What?
This telling me this earlier.
So the idea is that the ancient civilization, while fighting against this human rebellion, because they created humans to be their slaves, kind of in their image, both civilizations are wiped out by this massive solar flare. And that's why... It basically reboots everything.
Mm-hmm.
So the few remaining survivors of this decide to actually kind of blend their races. So you get mm-hmm. this first civilization, and the humans they created start breeding together. And the reason that your characters, the Assassins, some of them get Eagle Vision, is because they're actually tapping into the ancient memories and abilities that this first civilization had. So they can see things that no one else can perceive. It literally is a sixth sense. That's a trait passed down. So
are there more that start coming out as the game go on, or is it like
more
or is it just the Eagle Vision, or is it like more abilities?
The Eagle Vision is really it, but then it translates into, that's why you've got certain characters that are super agile. Yeah. They can scale these walls, and they have enhanced, not necessarily superhuman strength, but just their stamina and their speed and their intelligence are all innate traits from this first civilization. And what it turns out is that the reason Desmond in the present day has been tapped to have his memories accessed is because he's got this lineage of assassins that were involved in these major events. And most of these major events circle around what they call pieces of Eden. So Eden being the original civilization, and these pieces of Eden are tools that the first civilization used to keep order and control over the humans. And so as these have fallen into various hands throughout the course of history, these are people that have been powerful and people...
Well, give me an example of one of these things.
So one of them they call the Apple of Eden. And okay. It literally is a small sphere that the user can kind of control people's minds. They can force their will on others. I mean, literally with a snap of this thing, people are knocked out and pass out.
Don't you get it at the end of Assassin's Creed 1? I know you get it again later in the game, but I think at the end of Assassin's Creed 1, you actually get to hold it. And if you, when you wield it, it obliterates. It sends like a ray of light that disintegrates people.
But it's up to the controller. It's his ability to influence others. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things that came out about this first game is that Altair ultimately comes to possess it and realizes the power of it and decides this isn't something that we should have and locks it away. And that's where the second game picks up, is now you're playing as still Desmond, but you're accessing the memories of another ancestor.
And I remember something vaguely about the second game where he gets free at the end of the first game.
He does.
And what's neat is that, so he gets free and this other group grabs him and they take him off to this remote location. They have their own animus, which has, because the game has improved a bit, they have some improved capabilities of their animus, which then as in either Brotherhood or Revelations, the Templars find you in this modern day setting and you have some modern day action where you're running and escaping. And then your team takes you to another remote location, this hidden cave. I think in Assassin's Creed 3, which I won't jump into that yet.
We'll get to that. But so the whole modern story revolves around both trying to access your memories so that you can stay, as the modern day assassins try to stay ahead of the Templars, Abstergo Industries, as well as also trying to prevent, through means that they don't know how yet, this predicted resurgence of this solar flare.
So if they have all the pieces of this ancient civilization, they'll be either able to predict or to control the solar flare?
Yeah, they could stop it, essentially.
At least that's what everyone has been telling them. That's why they're chasing them. So ultimately, it's not as much about collecting the pieces of Eden, but it's about finding out the information that these pieces of Eden led to your ancestors to know.
So, I have a question. Why couldn't they stop the first solar flare?
Because this first civilization you're talking about, they hadn't figured out how to yet. But they were able to, because they're so advanced, they could implant themselves into these artifacts to go through time. Learn, as this happened multiple times, each time they learn, okay, this way didn't work, how can we do it? So they've implanted themselves, they say digitally, but they had to do it some other way too to get in these people's heads earlier. But they could teleport or telegraph their entities through other people.
So they could see the thousand-year-old entities inside these.
They could see the future coming enough that they knew they wouldn't be able to prevent it, but they would be able to put pieces in place to prevent it from happening again.
Sounds a lot like another cycle of destruction.
Yeah, I don't know if I've heard of another game like that.
Reapers.
And what gets neat is that this first civilization, they're trying to step up. Now there's turmoil between them, and there's one of them that if they use this this thing to stop the solar flare, it will revive one of them, and this one will then take over the Earth. It's like Juno, Minerva,
Jupiter.
And one of them is evil, which has been locked away in these tombs, for centuries. And they're like, well, if you use our technology to stop the solar flare, you will free her from her captivity, and now she will potentially take over the Earth, and she could
crazy
just destroy.
Minerva.
Right?
So real quick, the second game. What is it gameplay wise? Does it introduce anything new or refine? How does it refine the first game?
The whole aspect of So the first game was open world to a fault. If you wanted to travel from Jerusalem to Acre, I think they call it in the game, you literally had to get on a horse or walk the distance in the game from one city to the next.
Yep.
So the next one kind of says, okay, you can fast travel, but then you might miss some of these little things in between. So if you want to walk, you can. Some of the stuff, just as far as simple gameplay of you don't necessarily have to blend in with a group of people dressed exactly like you in order to get away. You can just kind of blend in with groups. You can. There's other places to hide. There's new tools for your, you know, more advanced assassin to be able to use in his disposal. You know, and that's where Da Vinci comes in. You befriend him, save his life, and ultimately he becomes the guy upgrading your tools.
Oh, okay.
And then
that makes sense.
Yeah, but it advances.
Levels? Are there levels? Like, does the character have like a skills tree, like in Skyrim, or
not as much directly? You can kind of improve your ability to carry certain items. It's more like the Batman aspect, where it's at least the first couple games, where it's like, okay, instead of just being able to take on two guys, you can take on four now, and you can. Carry more bombs or, and
It's not as customizable as Skyrim. You will be the same character. Everyone that plays through it will be the same character by the end of Assassin's Creed 2. You can't be like, well, I want more stealth or more long distance. No, they just keep improving. Yeah, giving you more and more options. You can take on more people.
Also part of the Assassin's Creed 2
universe.
All Ezio? Yes, all Ezio. So,
these full release games? Are they
full
release
games? They introduced new things too. Like Brotherhood introduced recruiting other assassins. So as you're going through the game, you maybe save some citizens.
This is the one I watched a lot of.
And you can now level them up.
And this is where the multiplayer came
sounds
into,
a little
right?
Like, sounds a little like Metal Gear Solid Peace Walker, where like you're building your base as you rescue other operatives.
Yeah.
I mean, these guys will literally show up to your rescue. Like in Assassin's Creed 2, you'd save a group of people from bad guys, whichever way you want to term that. And then if you're running away, they would kind of interfere with the people chasing you. Once you get to Brotherhood, you would actually be recruiting people into your cause, and you go from being like kind of a novice assassin at the beginning of Assassin's Creed 2 to a master assassin, and now you're building the Brotherhood around your concepts and what you want. And so there are scenes where you'll be walking through an area where there's all sorts of, you know, you're surrounded by bad guys, and you snap your fingers and this storm of arrows comes down and just takes everybody out.
Okay, that's nice.
Or cool stuff like you see an entrance to a fortress and there's two guards, and you call them, you whistle, and you're maybe standing in a bush or sitting on a bench. You whistle, and they jump down and air assassinate the two guys and then run off. And then you get to just walk right in.
What about Revelations?
That introduced the tower defense kind of thing, right? Where you have your assassin hideout, and now you can put archers and...
Became a tower defense game?
It had a tower defense mode.
I'm sorry, if someone's attacking your base, then you're really failing as an assassin.
But, well, so they introduced a couple That's different things. Funny. Because first, it's not tower defense. There's actually this thing where it's like there's an area that's overrun by enemies. Okay. You have to take this area away from them. You have to go in and kill the captain of the base and reclaim it.
Oh, I'm talking about the ones though where you actually can set archers on certain areas.
Right. So what it does is it kind of takes that concept of like, this is your tower and you own it, and I'm going to sneak in and assassinate the captain, and now this base is mine. And it flips it on its head to, now guys are coming after you, and you have to place these guys strategically. It wasn't something that they carried on through further games, so it became obvious that it was kind of tedious. And but it was at least something different that they did.
Did you have to do it to play the game?
Like once in the story, and then there were more like you could do it for all the defenses. Maybe once or twice it was, you know.
It got to a point where it became kind of automated, where you could just kind of
you knew how to make it work.
Rob, let me check in with you.
Yeah.
Do you have any questions so far? More questions?
No, actually I don't. I'm intrigued by the overall story arc.
I do
kind of have a question. But I kind of want to save it towards the end.
Save it to the end.
Yeah.
Assassin's Creed 3, 2012.
Is this the Native American one?
Yes.
Comes out.
looked awesome.
And does not... I remember there was a lot of negative criticism aimed at it. And I don't remember right off the top of my head review scores, but I remember like listening to other podcasts and people really like railing against the game. What was wrong with Assassin's Creed 3? Which is unfortunate because the setting sounds really cool.
Yeah, it seemed really cool.
And it's the end of the trilogy. It's the third game.
So it wraps up the Desmond Miles storyline, at least.
I heard something about this that made me very unhappy. Yeah, but go ahead.
So it wraps up that...
I don't know if we should spoil. Well, this is...
I want to talk about it.
I think this game has improved. I think more people would play it if they knew some of these things.
Okay.
Which we'll see if we get into the spoiler or not, but...
But so it takes you from being in more truly medieval settings, even the Renaissance, you know, I mean, the end of the Ezio storyline. Part of the reason I think the negative reviews are there is because Ezio became this fantastically lovable character.
For three games.
Yeah. He starts off as this combination of both Luke Skywalker and Han Solo and their personalities.
Yeah.
He's like the young guy.
Yeah.
He's the young guy kind of thrown into it, but he's still like this. He's got the swagger and he's like getting laid all the time.
Who voices him? Do you know, remember who voices him?
No, I'd have to look it up. But so, the thing is, though, you see him progressively age and get to the point where he's kind of like, I'm tired of this war. And I don't want to be involved in this anymore. I want to have a family, and I want to. And they actually truly wrap his storyline with an animated video. Mm-hmm. But he just gets to this point where he's been all over the world. Even as an old man now, he's gone out fighting and done all these things.
And you play as Ezio in all three games.
Yeah, in all three games in his trilogy, there is a point where you break. Even Ezio has a memory going back to.
Oh, really?
Altair.
Oh, cool.
And you see that Altair actually fell in love with a woman who was a Templar, and kind of just there was this merging of things. So it gets convoluted, and you kind of see that there is no black and white in this game. There are still things that cross over.
Where you play as Altair, like as old Altair. We can barely walk even. I think that's Revelations.
And it reveals to you that Altair kind of like he didn't lead an easy life. You run around a lot of the first game with Ezio, trying to collect pages of a memoir that Altair had read and kind of rebuild this town around the central theme of what the assassins are all about. And then it progresses to Ezio kind of being in this political intrigue and then just getting older and just really wanting answers to know that his life was worth it. And so you get really... in depth and fall in love with this character and understand him, and then you just move on to another guy.
Now hold on. This should not have been a surprise because you moved on to somebody else for the second game. It's not like Metal Gear where you expected to play a Solid Snake and then got the carpet pulled from under you.
What happened with...
Actually...
But you had Altair only for one game, and even though his influence radiates through the rest of the game and you kind of play secondary memories of him... You only play as Altair once. Ezio, you get to know. Altair had no real family. He was just the assassin. You didn't learn a lot about him as a person other than his progress. I mean, you start with Ezio as literally seeing your family murdered. Mm-hmm. And that's how you join the assassins, as this young, angry, like, I want vengeance. And you see him progress past his vengeance into a cause, and then pass the cause into just life weary and wanting peace. And so the progression there is like, it's just entirely different. And you're spending three games with him.
So who's
that
the
actually sounds like a fault of the game. It sounds like they should have done maybe instead of focusing on that one character for three separate games, maybe done three separate assassins.
There's actually something that's really satisfying about continuing to see how Ezio's life goes.
Yeah.
And I think that's why a lot of people were frustrated when you just pick up with this new guy now that you've crossed the pond and you're in revolutionary America.
That sounds so cool, though.
And it is, if you're open to just, you know, being a new character.
Who's the new character?
His Indian name is like Ron Quixotiton or something like that. I can't pronounce it.
It's a Native American?
It's Native American, okay. But he's got an adopted name of Connor. And he's a Native American. What's interesting is they drop you into this game not as Connor, but as Connor's father,
yeah.
who's crossing the Atlantic from England. You see this, you know, you kind of play this thing and you're like, okay, I'm starting as an assassin. And then it turns out that Connor's father is a Templar and has come over to be the Grand Master of the Templars in the new colonies.
this just made me think of this. When Desmond like jacks out of the Animus for the first time in Assassin's Creed 3, was he like, oh man, it's not Ezio anymore?
There is some confusion. He's like, wait, what the hell? That was a Templar. Mm-hmm. And there's some confusion there.
Is it because of the blending between Altair and the Templars in Revelations?
They don't always specify exactly where in the family tree some of these came from. It's because you can access the genetic memory. It's somebody that from his ancestral tree.
Yeah. Okay.
So part of it is...
So there are Templars in his ancestral tree.
Yeah.
So part of it is the change of character, but I remember hearing there were technical issues with Assassin's Creed 3
It was pretty glitchy, and what happened with it too is that Assassin's Creed already kind of... You have a lot of problems where you want to jump one place and your guy will jump completely in the wrong spot. Or you want to do a dive into a haystack and your guy instead jumps the wrong way and kills himself. And this game introduced more agile climbing through trees and going more quickly through the wilderness, which sounds amazing, but it kept the same clumsy controls. And so you're trying to jump through these trees and hit these narrow limbs and you're constantly missing it and falling and failing the quest or failing the mission. So all the neat things it tried to introduce, it wasn't executing it very well.
Also missing from this game, compared to the earlier games, there are these kind of like tomb quests where you go into these places. And some of them were buildings, some of them were literally tombs. But you go in as your character, whether it's Ezio or Altair, and you have to traverse through this area in a certain way, in a certain pattern. So it's a combination of puzzle and the agility and the timing piece in order to get to specific treasures or something that will allow you to access part of an overall treasure hunt. This one didn't really have it. Yeah. You go from being in city settings with the occasional part outside the city to literally you're in the wilderness and you're doing the Oregon Trail part where it's like, I'm going to go hunt for wolves today. which was interesting in its own aspect, but there's a lot of gigantic open wilderness areas.
Yeah. And he's probably the least interesting assassin, like main character, I would say. Like, not quite whiny, but not great, not very confident, not a lot of personality.
There's a disconnect there from how they kind of wrote the previous characters to this one.
Yeah.
And it's probably the most historically... interesting part of the story
George
for me.
Washington, mm-hmm. Benjamin Franklin, you meet, right? In that game?
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, there's
so cool, but.
But at the same time, you're kind of playing as this character that you're like, all right, well, just get through this one and see what the next one brings.
Kind of wish I was that Templar guy still.
Did they ever go back and fix some of the technical issues with a patch or anything?
Well, what happens in the later games is they introduce his father ends up being a very key role in. Hints at him in Assassin's Creed 4, Black Flag, and then even in Unity, and then in Rogue.
Oh, he's still alive? Connor's father's still alive?
Well, what you find is that Assassin's Creed 4 takes place before Assassin's Creed 3.
What?
The way that they do this is you've got the Ezio storyline, and then you're a guy who's on a boat coming from England, landing in the colonies. And that story wraps with, he has a bastard son with an Indian woman. He's out searching for another piece of Eden. He's out searching for something that will lead him to this massive first civilization treasure or whatever they think it's going to be. He winds up having a child with this Indian woman, and the Indian woman raises him, and he, of course, has all the skills and whatever. And he comes into conflict with his father because the Indian village that he lives in is destroyed by settlers and people looking to take over the lands and doing all sorts of things. So as he is adopted into the English world by an assassin, an aging assassin, he realizes that his father's a Templar and is against everything that he's been taught. So as their stories progress and it leads to the American Revolution...
Mm-hmm. Does he gain eagle vision?
Oh, he's had it all along.
I think you play with him as a child, too. It starts out, like, as a 16-year-old. You kind of run through the forest with some of your friends.
And it's just kind of being goofy. Some animals. Yeah.
You can use your eagle vision. You play hide and seek, I think, is one of the first missions. You know, using your eagle vision to find your friends and then to hide from your friends.
You really don't sound taken with this part.
Well, it's hard because you're used to being an assassin with at least a minimal amount of training at each game, or at least kind of having, he's got the climbing skills, but like I said, you're used to kind of a very urban environment for these games, at least in whatever historical context they're in. And then the next thing you know, you're like, okay, so I'm living in the woods and I got a loincloth. I don't know what's going on.
What about gameplay wise for 3?
It was better in some areas. Some of the fighting aspect was good. Much larger crowds to interact with when you're in the city. They introduced some other things that were kind of more.
The ship, the naval war, which became huge in 4, but they introduced it in 3, and it's like, okay, this is neat.
Was 3 the first one that jumped to the PS4 and Xbox One, or was it the last of PS3? And
it was the last one. Okay. It kind of maxed
Black
out.
Black Flag was released on all four.
They introduced the naval warfare, which is cool because you can actually get away and do things that you've never done before. I mean, you're out in the open seas. There are naval battles. And some of it is for the purpose of just, you know, doing something new and trying it out. Some of it's for gameplay reasons. You kind of wind up, instead of doing a tower defense, this one is more where you kind of build this settlement around you and do these different things. So some of it's like I'm bringing supplies.
Is this 3 or 4?
In 3.
Okay.
And then so what happens is you get through 3.
Now I know, because I looked this up before we recorded, 3 is the end of Desmond's storyline.
Correct.
It's the end of the trilogy.
Technically speaking, his character does have the end of his storyline, mm-hmm. but his influence and even his appearances in the game don't stop there.
Okay.
Now I'm really confused.
So what happens is...
You realize you have these animus. Anyone could go through... Anyone that has that relation, that bloodline, could jump in this animus and access this
Did
family.
Did he have a bastard child somewhere?
No. So what happens they reveal then in 4 that Abstergo had collected... So... I don't know if you guys want me to spoil this or not.
Spoil it for me. I'm not going to play all these games.
Desmond dies.
Right.
At the end of 3.
I knew that. I actually knew that.
But what they hint at, going back to this whole first civilization thing, is that even though Desmond has to literally sacrifice his life to free this evil first civilization person, and that's the trade-off that he has in order to save the world. The device that this first civilization person built will save the world from this giant super flare, but it's going to release her digital consciousness.
So, okay, so the flare stopped.
The flare stopped.
Okay.
The world
Desmond
is saved.
He sacrificed himself to save the world.
Okay. But Ultron gets free.
Right. But what they hint at is that there's the possibility, and I haven't finished Unity, which is the most recent of the PS4 games. What they hint at is that Desmond's consciousness may have been transferred into the machine in the same way that this first civilization person's might have.
Oh, okay.
Well, Desmond even communicates with someone that went through this before, and he's called Test Subject 16.
Yeah.
So Desmond's communicating with this guy and eventually meets him in Revelations, meets this physical interpretation of this digital memory that's trying to guide him through it too.
But he thinks it's himself?
No,
he knows it's a different person. He knows he's studied enough that he's learned, okay, they've done this to other people. Like at the end of 1, we say they reveal that many people have been, you know, captured.
And you get these warning signs. So it turns out Subject 16 was the guy that Abstergo had also abducted. And he died in the Animus, but it turns out that his consciousness winds up kind of lodged in the hard disk.
Interesting, okay.
So they hint that it's possible this may have happened to Desmond as well. And that he may still live on in a digital form. As far as then how they expand the games, Abstergo goes and basically collects Desmond's body and take away enough genetic information that they then learn how to not only unlock anybody can go into the Animus, but you can relive other people's memories as well. Mm-hmm. So game number 4, Black Flag, starts as you're basically someone who's been recruited to test the technology out at Abstergo. So you're now kind of a nameless player.
I've heard very good things about Black Flag.
And the way that they carry on the Desmond storyline is the modern day assassins that were working with Desmond in the 2012 Save the World from the Flare, they're now kind of making their way into Abstergo to try and recruit people there and say, you're not working for who you think you are. Abstergo is trying to pass off this whole relive people's memories and it'll be an adventure, like is a new virtual reality, when in fact they're just using these people to scrub through memories to find places that they can find interesting things and then rewrite history as they want it to be seen.
Mm. Now, you mentioned, Derek, that 4 brings in naval combat.
It does. Yeah.
How
starts
how
in 3, that, but 4 expands on
how
it.
How does that? I mean, I've heard 4 got extraordinarily good reviews.
Yeah, it's the setting of 4 is that you're a pirate, you know, and you're living this pirate lifestyle.
What's the time frame? What
pre? It's pre-Revolutionary War, so early 1700s.
Yeah. Okay. Cool. Yeah.
And it gives you kind of a more open world and does it really well, where it kind of makes it gives you control of the ship, and now you can upgrade the ship, you can attack other ships or trade, build a fleet, explore this world. You can hunt animals, hunt, you know, whales and sharks. It gives you a lot more freedom. And it kind of does, I think what the problem with 3 was that you have all these people that are trying to jump in like, oh, cool, colonial times, I can just jump in and kill some people. But then they realize there's this crazy story that we just explained to you guys that you're like, well, wait a minute, I just want to scalp some people and assassinate and go away with it. You know, 4 lets people come in for the first time, even if this is your first Assassin's Creed game. It hints at the backstory and it gives enough to us that have played it and know the crazy story. But it's like, hey, just have some fun. Let's go and let's kill some people. Let's sail some boat. Let's be a pirate. Mm-hmm. You know,
okay. Did they put Unity and what was the one before it?
4, Black Flag.
Black Flag. Black Flag is definitely out on Xbox One. Did Unity come out on that?
Unity only came out on Xbox One and PlayStation 4. It was only...
Oh, that's right. It was on both. Okay.
Yeah, it was on the only current gen, because it introduced massive crowds. That's going through the French Revolution and all that, so it's crazy. So, yeah. So, 4's story was more lighthearted. The interactions of modern time was with a nameless person, so you were a nameless... You weren't even necessarily an assassin. But you had the characters from Assassin's Creed 1 through 3, the guys that were helping Desmond, they kind of sneak in. They're working at a coffee shop, and one's a delivery person. They're like, oh, hey, let us see your little your PDA device there. And let's, you can help us go check these things out. And you're like, okay, whatever. But it doesn't get super deep into the story with that.
Hmm.
And I'm guessing Unity starts getting back into...
Actually, no, Unity doesn't do much with modern day at all. I think that's kind of also why Unity failed. They try, well, let's just take out modern day almost entirely.
Oh, really?
And so there's not much of it, right?
No, it's much more limited.
Yeah.
And so this whole Minerva thing, they're kind of sweeping under the carpet?
No, I think they're planning something. I mean, because after the first
game... I had actually heard talk that one of the next Assassin's Creed was going to be totally taking place in the future.
You know, there's been so many discussions about where the next one's going to happen. I mean, the upcoming one for the fall, Syndicate, is like in London, Industrial Revolution.
Yeah.
You know, they've talked about everything from World War II, Japan, to, I know that people have tossed about like World War I, Korea, yeah. Vietnam. I mean, there's any major historical thing they could find a way to write into the game. So it's become a question of how and when and where are they going to write this. But ultimately, one of the things that these guys did, which I think is interesting because we were talking earlier about Arkham, is they kind of got into the dual studios making these games so that it's not every 3 years one's coming out. So it was Ubi in Montreal did the first one. And I think it was like Ubi Quebec or some other studio. And they're all collaborated together, but they kind of...
But they're different creative forces.
Different, I mean, ultimately, one kind of creative vision, but different studios doing it.
Well, there it is. There's the quick, like, tumble through the Creed series plotline. Rob, do you have any questions so far?
You've
been asking them. So, gentlemen, I tasked you with a couple different questions. So, first off, which is your favorite game in the series?
I would say Assassin's Creed 4. Black Flag. Just because it gives you this enough story, and once you get towards the end of the game, it starts getting really deep into the whole Templar assassin thing. There is some really neat little twists. And the gameplay is just a lot of fun. It's a very fun game.
DJ?
For me, I probably have to go back to Brotherhood, which it's kind of it's the middle story of a trilogy, of a larger trilogy. Mm-hmm. But the concept of the Brotherhood, you know, you being able to call in these people, the political storyline going on in the background between the Medici and the Borgia, and like really some of the stuff that went on as it pertained to the Catholic Church, and so I just found really fascinating.
If I've never played an Assassin's Creed game before, where should I start?
I would say, you might disagree, I would say 4, and if it intrigues you enough, definitely you could skip 1 and play 2, and maybe then go to Brotherhood of Revelations, and if you still really like it, then go to 1, and then maybe play 3.
I probably never play 1 again.
You wouldn't, yeah.
If you don't play 1, because they don't have the Mass Effect style, just go through and make your choices.
Yeah.
It's not like that. They don't have the comic book version. Go back and watch the cutscenes on YouTube. Read the summary. But then I would start with either Assassin's Creed 2 mm-hmm. or Black Flag, because Black Flag is another one where it just lets you kind of drop in and go.
Okay.
Just speaking to the first game, and to compare it to Mass Effect, I know some people, Mass Effect 2 and 3 were just such huge leaps over the first game that they cannot go back and play the first game anymore. Mm-hmm. It's too hard. I don't have that problem. I've
gone back and played all 3 games so many times. Yeah.
Do you gentlemen think that the first game is still playable?
I think it would need one of the things we were talking about earlier is Mass Effect maybe getting an HD upgrade or something like that. I think it needs that kind of massive update to...
Well, I got to where on Mass Effect 1 where I could tweak things. Like, I had a sniper rifle that would drop anything in one hit, but it would overheat. So if I missed, I was screwed.
It's not that the first Assassin's Creed
it's not a horrible game. And it's not so technically behind that it couldn't hold up. It's just when you look at what they've done with it since, it really would drag you through. Like I said, 2007, playing through it for the first time, mm-hmm. I was pretty impressed, and I could overlook the technical stuff by comparison. And now I would need them to go back and kind of retroactively fix a bunch of things. Mm-hmm. Not necessarily even just visual, just the controls.
Do you think it felt like kind of a long game too, though? I even felt like it was a little longer than it needed to be. But I mean, if you go past, like, without the no fast travel and all that, it still felt, you had to kill, I think, 9 Templars, and then the 10th one, you're master. And I think it kind of felt like by the 6th or 7th one, you're like, all right, 3 more to go, like, come on.
Yeah, and that's been one of the things that's plagued the series overall, is the kind of formulaic, like, first you have to get all the information on the bad guy, then you go kill the bad guy.
A lot of people said that about the Mass Effect thing, too, what's the creator?
BioWare.
They had a formula to all their games.
They do.
Yeah.
But they hide it.
Sometimes it works, and sometimes it doesn't. Sometimes, like I said, the story will carry you past. But it would be hard to go back and play the first one now. Not impossible. Just it would be rough.
Okay. So you say start with 2.
I would say start with 2 if you're really interested in the whole first civilization part. Mm-hmm. Because eventually when they do wrap that up,
yeah,
it's going to be painful for people that started at 4 and never went back and read it. I mean, there's some parts that even talking about it, I'm like, oh man, it sounds so screwed up. But when it's playing out in front of you, you're sitting there kind of jaw open, like, okay, that just happened. How do we deal with this?
So, who's your favorite character in the game, in the series?
Ezio is pretty fantastic.
Yeah, Ezio is pretty awesome.
Not Desmond?
The hard part about Desmond is, even though his story does develop, and ultimately you really do kind of become fond of him, especially right when they decide to kill him, you don't spend enough time as him. Only in the later games did you really even get to really play any kind of part where you're running around as Desmond in modern times doing assassin things.
I do have a question for you. So at the end of 3, do you get a sense of closure? Like, maybe this was what they were trying to finish?
I would say yes, except for the fact that in Black Flag, they carry on the Minerva, like, escaping digitally thing just mm-hmm. enough that you're like, I mean, you literally hack into files where you're looking at Desmond's body, mm-hmm. and you're seeing what the company Abstergo has done behind the scenes, and you're kind of going, I want more of this. I want it to get back into that.
Mm-hmm.
And they do some interesting, clever things to tie Black Flag's history into the modern day aspect of the story, but it leaves you really wanting more.
Okay.
So it doesn't really wrap nothing's wrapped up for me there yet.
Is what, 3 playable? Or is it so frustrating?
No, it's definitely playable.
Okay.
Just, I mean, if you go into if that's your first one that, you know, if you...
It won't be my first one. 4. I've got 4 as a free download, so...
Well, I think what starts happening in 3 and then 4 and Unity and even this little known one Rogue that came out at the same time as Unity, they start tying in the characters more. You start seeing more of the assassin stories tying in together even more closely. There's some really neat twists of how they're related and how it all connects. Like with the opening scene of Unity, how the main character's father is killed, there's really neat aspects of that scene, who's killing him, that ties in with these other games. And that becomes more the thing with that. They kind of put that Minerva, crazy first civilization, kind of back a little bit more and focus more on the relations of all them.
I haven't heard you guys really mention much about this, but is there a favorite villain?
Ooh. Haytham, the guy who's the father of the main protagonist in 3, is a pretty solid villain.
Mm-hmm.
Just because you kind of... It's that whole, like, Luke versus Darth Vader thing, so you kind of just want to see, like, is he going to kill him? Is he going to let him live? What's going to happen there? Is he going to come to respect him? And, you know, they go there... That was pretty good. But I think my favorite set of bad guys were... the Borgia from the Ezio storyline, which after watching that and then at the time dating a girl who was very into the Borgia TV show, be like, I see things differently when I watch these characters.
Do you agree with that?
I'd have to say Haytham for sure. He's the most well-defined. Every other villain, there's a lot of great villains in there, but most of them you kind of know they're going to get assassinated pretty soon.
Is like, does Haytham have like redeemable qualities or...
Oh, absolutely.
He does. Okay. Yeah, that's with him, you start to realize that the assassins aren't the good guys. Not the Templars aren't either, but there's not really a good guy, bad guy. It's, you've been led to believe that.
How is Abstergo portrayed? Because every time you mention it,
Abstergo,
I think of the Umbrella Corporation.
Yeah.
They're very much like that. They definitely are kind of that, supposed to be that all-encompassing, they've got their fingers in every pot kind of a thing.
What's revealed at the end of 4, kind of a spoiler, that Abstergo is our Templars. That Abstergo is Templars. That's who they're, the people
that's
run.
It's hinted at all along, but it's literally revealed. Yeah. It's literally, that's what they're all about, is they want to be in everybody's living room through the TV, through the radio, through the internet.
That control, yeah.
So they're getting to the point to where they're becoming evil Big Brother?
Well, it depends on what, if you think that's evil. They don't want, they just want society to last. They want everyone to be unified and on the same page.
Is it the title of the next one? Does that lead into that?
No. Well, Unity was the title of the last one. But,
that's what I'm saying.
And you said Unity was not well received.
Not really. It was also, I think, kind of like Arkham... City? Is it Arkham City? Was that the newest one? Like, had all those problems on PC?
Arkham Knight had a ton of problems on PC.
Yeah. Unity had a lot of problems on 1. A lot of glitches. You'd fall through the map. All these things.
Oh, God.
Really, probably the most beautiful Assassin's Creed game.
Oh,
the graphics. It's unreal. There's a hot air balloon ride, and, like, you're chasing the hot air balloon.
Is that the one where, like, the faces wouldn't load? So you were looking at, like, eyes and, like,
It would just kind of take you out of it a bit, and I think that was a big problem with it.
Are you implying Ubisoft would release a game that is not ready to be released?
Not at all, sir.
Okay.
Not at all.
You're all right. This isn't Bethesda. That's right, Bethesda.
I think that was a big problem with Unity. It actually has a pretty great storyline.
Good love interest. I'm about 3/4 of the way through it, but I'll tell you what. The character, the main protagonist, isn't as easy to kind of relate to. But at the same time, you do kind of find yourself going, okay, he's kind of a charming, roguish kind of guy. He's fun.
He's kind of like a version of Ezio. He's kind of, he's got hints of him.
I have to admit, like, the thing that has always piqued my curiosity about these games is the setting. And I've heard I think it was starting with the second game, but maybe it was with the first game. They spent a good amount of time just creating the detail of the world. Yeah. How is the detail of the various worlds? Like,
I think it's great. I think it's a big thing about the game.
Is it too much? Is it bland? Is it?
They try to be historically accurate when they can be. I mean, everything is at like a 1/6 scale or something like that. But when you start thinking about where games were, even open world games, and then start putting yourself into these immersive worlds where, you know, you go from like there's 10 other characters on the street to now there's literally thousands as you're walking through, whether it's Boston or whether it's New York in the colonial setting, or whether it's when you're in Paris and you're walking through and they're just, it's swamped. It gives you a feeling of really having to kind of like deal with the fact that you're not just running through streets chasing after bad guys or being chased by bad guys. There are crowds and you have to deal with them, and there are people, there's you hear different accents and you hear different things being said in the background, that it's not like some of the Batman games where it's like, oh, if you catch that, oh, you know, go investigate to the east because that guy was talking about it. It's, there's just random stuff going on and you feel like you're in a city running around trying to figure out what's going on.
Which setting is your favorite?
Well, my favorite setting is actually this one moment in Unity where the character in that one eventually, because of the animus, I'm not exactly sure why, goes through various eras in time. And there's this one moment where you have to ascend the Eiffel Tower during World War II, during an attack.
Actually
fighter planes flying around shooting at you, and you're trying to run through, but the world is collapsing through the animus as well. So they're shooting at you, running through people with guns.
And you're just jumping into this vortex.
You need to jump into a vortex. You have to get to the top of it and then jump off the top of the Eiffel Tower into a vortex. And so that moment was one of my favorites, I think.
That's cool.
And yeah. It's what's interesting is you're playing this guy from, you know, a time period that does not belong at all. Climbing the Eiffel Tower with, you know, with, you got German attackers, you know, German fighter planes coming in and trying to attack you. But the concept, as they explain it, is, you know, hey, the Animus is being hacked and it's screwing up things with our chronology. Yeah, okay. So we just need you to get from here to here and you'll be fine.
So question, like,
it gives it a Tron feeling, kind of like.
So if something gets hacked in the Animus, it's untrue, or is it changing the past?
No, so it's what's essentially happening is the context of them kind of explaining it is that in order to get through all of these ancestral memories, the memories don't stop with the lifespan of the protagonist that you're playing, but in order to escape where they're trying to hack to get the information,
okay,
like, hey, we need to take you to a different section of memories, but in order to do so, yeah, you're going to cross over from a different ancestor's memories. So if you go from having a sword and a flintlock pistol to literally there's machine guns and bombers coming at you, don't worry about that. Just get from A to B. That's kind of how they explain it to you.
Okay.
Have I stumbled upon your question yet?
No.
That you were going to ask?
Oh, dear God, I forgot my question.
Well, if you remember, I've got another one I want to throw out there. Just for giggles, what setting would you like to see them tackle next?
Dinosaurs.
You want to prehistoric you see them go back that far?
I want to see them sliding, gliding up and down, dinosaurs.
How does that go with the first civilization, man?
That's maybe the first solar flare. Maybe the first solar flare killed the dinosaurs.
Yeah, it's kind of ambiguous in that way.
Okay. No, that'd be interesting to go back that far.
I didn't think of this ahead of time. That's not probably my real answer.
That's not your real answer?
But
you have a few seconds as DJ answers.
I want to see just a genuine modern setting, not as a kind of a gimmicky, we're not going to give you a temple to crawl through or a crypt. It's just you have to figure out this puzzle of climbing this building.
That puts it up against a lot of modern day games that already do that really well.
Well, and what's interesting is the same guys that developed Assassin's Creed are the ones that did Watch Dogs. And even though that game wasn't necessarily well received, there were some interesting things about that game, including some references back and forth between the two of kind of that they're in the same universe. So I'm wondering if they won't find a way to take a modern day assassin and put him into the Watch Dogs kind of world, with maybe without the technology of being able to hack everything, or vice versa. Maybe Watch Dogs becomes an Assassin's Creed game because that guy becomes an assassin. I mean, I don't know. But I think just a modern day urban setting would be really cool for the Assassin's Creed franchise, because it's going to make a lot of complications happen. You're not going to be able to just scale up a 30-story building, you know, and dive off that. Where's your haystack that you're going to dive into that are always conveniently placed?
So what they'll do is they'll put, with Desmond, they'll put him into a robotic body.
No, let's combine the ideas. So the caveman will have to use an animus to go forward in time so he knows which women to date.
I'm just a caveman. This world's confusing to me.
You still on dinosaurs? Did you come up with
no,
that?
No, actually, I kind of like your idea, and I that was kind of in my head as well. Even thinking maybe something during like Prohibition or Great Depression, that kind of era, like where it's not quite modern time, but there are like automobiles.
They could flip it back to the World War II scene.
You that know, would be cool.
Yeah.
I'm surprised they haven't tackled Japan in some fashion.
There was an animated feature that had a Japanese girl who came in search of old Ezio at that point, kind of looking for information, and he kind of learned, like, it was the whole, like, did you start that fight club? I didn't start that fight club. There's that kind of feeling to it.
Yeah.
And then I think there's, like, a side-scrolling mobile game out right now that deals with, like, feudal Japan era stuff. But, I mean, they've pushed it in so many different directions, and because it's been, you know, you've got 600 plus years of history from the time of the first game to present time, they could do a lot.
Yeah. Do you feel like they're dancing around the whole Minerva thing because they don't know what they're going to do with it? Or do you think they've got a definite end game?
I think it's a finance. I think they realize they can put this out every year and keep making money on it. So why not keep the story open-ended and kind of...
That's annoying. See, I don't like that.
I know. That's kind of where it's starting to get to now. I'm starting to kind of lose my interest a little bit because like I don't know that this overall story is going to conclude. But they're just kind of drawing it out a little bit.
Yeah.
The hour mark here, so we slowly have to wrap this up. I'm out of questions. I had the easy job tonight because I'm the outcast. Woo! My experts, is there anything we haven't touched on that you definitely want to bring up or talk about? We've talked a lot of plot details. We've talked reception of the different games. We've talked a little bit about reviews. Is there anything specific that you guys...
I mean, I guess I would say that you don't need to, if you haven't played these games and you don't get it, it's not one of those things where I would say you have to do this. And don't feel bad. I think it's one of those games that it's a fun experience if you're into it. You know, there's certain cult games that we all probably love that not everyone gets into. And this is probably just a very well-received cult game if you've been in it since the beginning and you stuck through it. I wouldn't say for anyone else to feel really bad if they can't get into it.
Well, I mean, Assassin's Creed has definitely become a... It's become a franchise. Like,
yes.
It's here. It's a franchise. It's not as old as other franchises, but it's here. Is there a game or a series that just does it better?
Ooh, that's tough. Because I think this was the game that took the stealth of Splinter Cell and kind of put it into an open world format. But I don't know. What was the Lord of the Rings game that came out not long
Shadow
ago?
Of Mordor.
Shadows of
that
Mordor.
Was supposedly something that like just ripped off a bunch of stuff that Assassin's Creed.
But I heard
had
it was done
on.
Really well.
Yeah.
Well, and I
but
think
sure, yeah.
I think that's probably something that's fair and realistic. But you know, when you're jumping into a game after the other series has gone through all the trouble of debugging everything for you over the course of four or five games, it's probably easy to do that fairly well. I don't know.
Well, look at the other games that are coming out. Like, Assassin's Creed comes out every year now. A new game every year. Like Call of Duty. That's like the only other franchise, right, that has a game besides sports games. And Call of Duty has the thing where they are not a connected story. It's always separate. Every once in a while, one will be a sequel to another. So Assassin's Creed has this problem where it's trying to create this fun, easy-to-play game, but they do have this crazy story they've already established. And so how are they going to draw in new players to each iteration of this game, and how are they going to keep people's interest that have been playing it since Assassin's Creed 1 that want to keep progressing the story? So they have a really hard job of doing that, and that's why I think it's going to be a struggle for them to keep this successful. Does that make sense?
Yes.
Yeah.
You know?
Very yeah. much so.
They've got the ease of having all of history to play with.
Yeah.
And the complication of...
Having all of history to play with.
Having all of history to play with. But having started in the Crusades and trying to work your way forward towards something. And the something is the hard part, because I think...
Well, I thought they already did this something.
Well, like we discussed, the whole concept of Desmond dying, but maybe he's stored digitally someplace... There is definitely an open-ended aspect to the whole Minerva, or maybe it's Juno. I always confuse the two. But there, if somebody, this digital consciousness from the first civilization still being around and lingering, and there's definitely some aspects of that they touched on in Black Flag that give you this whole idea that there's still a modern-day aspect of this happening. There's still a war going on between the Templars and the Assassins. It's just a matter of them figuring out how and when and where they want to end it. And maybe they don't. Maybe it does get pushed to the back burner so that they can keep cranking out different games. Or maybe, you know, we just haven't seen enough of what's coming out in the next few years to know where they're going to wrap it up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I feel kind of pulled a little bit of a Mass Effect, which is you had your main trilogy story end. But then they kept making games. Like, they're about to with Mass Effect 4. Which
I'm okay with that, because it's a completely different galaxy.
Sure.
Well, and that had such a great ending. Just, like, the perfect ending to a game like that, so...
Although they didn't quite get the ending right the first time in Mass Effect.
Oh, it was...
Never. No, they didn't.
But I think that's part of what they might be dealing with for Assassin's Creed. It's like, we can end it this way, we can end it that way, we can kind of do it a little bit of each.
All the fans... type of thing.
Yeah, and it's expanded beyond just the console games. You've got, there are books and comics that have been written that are that tie into it. You know, there's an upcoming movie which is supposed to be based, I think, on the first game, but is that going to stick with the canon, or is that going to go elsewhere? Is there going to be, you know, a separate universe to that? I mean, nobody knows.
And with all these characters, you can do prequels to those characters or fill in some of the gaps in the stories that we've already known. So there's so much they can do. I almost just wish they would end it and just focus this on games like make a new like Shadow of Mordor, and then make a, you know, like make a Deadpool game with this engine, this idea, and make, you know, kind of maybe end Assassin's Creed, but just get something else going with these ideas.
That's a really good question.
I just looked up the Assassin's Creed movie. It just comes out next year.
Because movies based on video games always turn out very well.
Have you done the Street Fighter podcast about the movie yet?
Not done Street Fighter. Okay. Podcast.
I'd like to be on that.
That's a very interesting question. Do you think it's time for the Assassin's Creed franchise to stop? I mean, sometimes franchises just need to stop. Do you think it's time?
I don't think it needs to stop necessarily, but I think they need to find a way to wrap what they started with the first game. And then acknowledge that, you know, that doesn't have to be the end of the story. You don't end, you know, whether you want to look at it from the first civilization aspect of millennia, you know, millions of years, or just from the characters that you've been playing as the protagonist, 600 years. You don't end all that just because they wrap up one overarching story arc. Mm-hmm. You know, the war between the Assassins and the Templars will continue. It's whether or not it's because of those things that came before it, or whether it's in some other setting.
Very, very unfair question to you, really quick. Should they wrap Batman's story with the Arkham games? Were you about to ask that?
I was going to ask, how do you feel then? Are you glad that Rocksteady ended Arkham Knight? Like, this is it?
But see, I like I said on the Arkham podcast, I think you can wrap the Arkham storyline, but not Batman. Ideal ending was Batman standing on a rooftop, breathing heavy, he's beating everybody.
Yep.
Superman comes in and says, "Bruce, the League needs your help. Let's go." And then you move on to other things.
And that's a different type of
exactly
game, but the Arkham games would be over
right
after that.
But you can have that kind of detail and that love of characters and the respect for them continue on just in a different story, in a different setting. And I think you can do the same with the Assassin's Creed. I think, you know, not every battle that happened between the Templars and the Assassins has to be about, did they stop the solar flare? Did they find the pieces of Eden? Some of it might just be really good personal stories that you can tell in a good setting in history.
Well, when I turned on my Wii U last week, Ubisoft was having a really great sale on all of their stuff.
Yeah.
Including 3 in Black Flag. So I'm a little curious. I might pick one up. I mean, the concept sounds really great. I actually wish I could start with the first one, but it really sounds like the first one might be a little rough.
It would be rough, really rough by current standards, but it's worth doing the wiki read and watching the cutscenes.
Rob, what about you?
I'm gonna try Black Flag. I like I said, games with gold on Xbox One just recently released it as a free download for the month, so I downloaded it. Figured why not?
Yeah,
give it a swing.
It's Assassin's Creed 4, like Black Flag, to me, it's kind of like The Last of Us on PlayStation 3. I think it's a game that everyone should play. I think that is a game that shows why video games are so important in our world right now. And Assassin's Creed 4, I think, fits in that too. It has the hints of a story if you want to get super deep. Now, it's like hearing a band for the first time. Oh, this band is great. Well, if you want, they have 4 other albums that came out before this. You know, and there's some more coming out. There's some EPs and some B-sides you can check out, you know. Or if you don't like them, no problem. Well, you enjoyed that album? Good. Leave it at that. And wait. I think that's what Assassin's Creed 4 is.
Nice music metaphor.
I'm trying. But, yeah.
Final thoughts, gentlemen? We're at the end. Slowly have to wrap this up, unfortunately.
You know, like I said, I'm kind of specific with my games. So anybody that doesn't want to try it or get involved in it, I'm not going to fault them to it. I like the revisionist history part. I like the ability for them to take stuff that you thought you knew. And even though you know it's fictional, the way that they turn it on its head, you wind yourself, you know, you find up yourself sitting there going, I never really thought about that, you know. I never thought about these people in this context. I can tell you I found myself watching a lot of, or going through a lot of Wikipedia pages to look at kind of like the history as it's written.
Oh, yeah.
And then you wonder within the context of that story, like, is it because kind of the history is written by the victors, or is this like, is there more to it? I mean, it makes you think in a lot of ways that you don't expect a video game is going to make you think.
They have George Washington as a Templar, right? Wasn't he?
Though there was a downloadable content for Assassin's Creed 3 where it was called it was the Tyrant King.
Yeah,
Tyrant. And basically, Washington, it was the idea is if Washington became a dictator instead of just the president. How could that have reshaped things? And if that was the case in the context of the game, how would you be the guy fighting back? And it gives you kind of a different skill set and things. So it's one of the other things that they can do is just play with time and play with history.
Cool. Derek, final thoughts?
It's a great game. If you don't want to get into like an RPG like Skyrim where you have a million things to do, plus you can customize your character to a big extent, if you want to just have a nice open world and not really worry about your character development as much, it's a great game for that. Also has just a really neat backstory, and it's a really cool series. I'm excited to see what happens with it. But they better do something good soon, because I'm about to jump out.
Oh, no!
Yeah, I might be wearing the Burger King crown in another year or two.
All right.
As an outcast.
That's all right. It happens. Sometimes you jump out of a series, but then you jump back in.
Yeah.
So, all right. Well, gentlemen, with that, we have to bring a rest to our Assassin's Creed podcast. At this time, does anybody have anything else they wish to plug? Either shows that you're doing, something that you're working on, websites, whatever you've got going on, now is the time.
Well, I'm working on recording an album with a band I played with 10 years ago, and we just got back together just to kind of play some music, and it's turning into an album. We're about 10 or 11 songs in right now, and it's coming out awesome.
I've heard a couple of these songs.
Yeah, I think I sent you one, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. You've sent me 2 now, I believe.
Quite possibly, yeah.
And from what I've heard, they're good.
Well, thank you.
Yeah.
What type of music?
This is kind of Britpop influenced, okay. Cure, The Jam. A couple guys that yeah, it's like they're a few years older than me, and just a little bit. They had that really, this really cool influence, and they really, when I was 19, introduced me to a lot of great music I would have never listened to otherwise. And so very sensible, melodic, just good music you can dance to.
Are they on the interwebs or the YouTubes?
We are. It's right now, it started as such a small project that we just have it on our personal YouTubes. I will say I have a SoundCloud page that I will probably put some of these songs up. It's soundcloud.com/Johnny-Highwind. Okay. So J-O-H-N-N-Y hyphen H-I-G-H-W-I-N-D. That has some of my personal songs I've written, but we're going to create our own. We have a Facebook page. I should have looked up the URL for it, but...
Well, that just means you have to come back.
I will come back and have... I'm creating a Simon SoundCloud... The name of the band is Simon.
Okay.
I'm creating a SoundCloud page for us in the next couple of days. So, nice. Yeah.
Rob, anything you wish to plug?
I don't have anything to plug.
All right, you come back here and you plug something next time we have you on.
I got something.
All right, moving on. DJ?
No, I don't have anything because I'm not as artistically inclined as all you people are, so I just sit back and enjoy and watch.
I made all that up.
Yeah,
so.
He's lying. If you're in the Chicago area, swing by Public House Theater. I do the Bye Bye Liver show from time to time. I'm performing again near the end of September, so this episode will be out before then, so you should come watch me.
Maybe I will this time.
Hey, you better. It's the last time I know I'm performing, so. I have a web series that will be coming out later this year called The Studio, so be on the lookout for that. I am taking topic suggestions, so if you have suggestions, comments, questions, protests, whatever you want, you can email them to nerdoutcastpodcast@gmail.com. Gentlemen, thank you so much for coming out tonight and talking about some Assassin's Creed.
Thank you.
This was a blast.
So are you the Ezio and you're the who are you?
I wanted to be Ezio.
Oh, shit.
Well, I could be old Ezio. Because I'm old.
Well, you guys are probably the same age.
Yeah.
I think we're the same age, yeah.
37?
Yeah, close enough.
All right.
Fair enough.
What if he was like 19?
I would be.
We're alternate timelines of Ezio. Yeah, we'll just, yeah, simultaneous.
Man, no one wants to be that Native American guy. Fine.
No, nobody wants to be.
Can I be, what was his name?
Hatham?
You can be Hatham. Okay. I've been your host, Chris Bashan, and talking with me tonight about Assassin's Creed have been
Derek Cole,
Rob Shoemate,
DJ Fink.
Thank you for listening.